the threshold, his hands gripping the frame on both sides, his flight jacket unbuttoned, and his head bowed. My immediate elation is slain by logic. "What are you doing?" I whisper, trying to look past him to see if there's anyone else in the hallway who could report him. "Did you love him?" The question is a low rumble of sound. "Someone is going to see you." "Did you love him?" Zayden lifts his head and pins me with a look that borders on feral. "I have to know. I can handle it, but I have to know." "Oh, for Amari's sake." I grab the lapels of his flight jacket and yank him into my room, and he flicks his wrist, shutting the door behind him. The loud click tells me he's locked it, too. "I was with Halden years ago."
"Yeah, I picked up on that."
His brow knits as he nods. "I picked up on a lot of things he was thinking." I blink. "That's not how your signet—"
"Did you love him?" he repeats.
"Holy shit." My hands fall from his jacket. "You're actually jealous."
"Yes, love, I'm jealous."
He splays his hand over the small of my back and tugs me toward him.
"I'm jealous of the armor that holds you when I can't, the sheets on your bed that caress your skin every night, and the blades that feel your hands. So when the prince of our realm walks into my classroom and starts talking to the woman I love with what can only be considered intense familiarity, and then he has the audacity to ask her out right in front of me, naturally, I'm going to get jealous."
He brings our bodies flush.
"And put him into a wall?"
My hands skim the cold skin of his neck to cup his chilled cheeks.
"He's been outside for a while." "I told you I would."
His gaze bores into mine and my pulse skips.
"Back in Aracia, remember? Right after I put you on my throne, spread those beautiful thighs, I slipped my thumb over his perfect mouth.
I remember. And so does my body, which is instantly heated. He nips the pad of my thumb and my hand falls away.
"I told you I'd feel jealous, and then I'd kick his ass. I might have turned, but I'm still a man of my word when it comes to you."
"You're Zayden Ryerson." I rise up on my toes and press a kiss to his chin.
"Shadow Wielder."
Another at his jaw.
"Duke of Tirindor."
My mouth brushes just beneath his earlobe.
"Love of my life.
You have nothing to be jealous of." His hand flexes along my spine, but then he steps back, putting a few feet between us.
"Did you love him? Violet, you have to tell me."
The sharp edge of desperation in his voice does me in.
"Not the way I love you,"
I admit softly. He retreats until his ass hits my desk, then stares at the floor.
"You loved him."
"I was 18. I search my memories, trying to think of a better word to describe what I'd felt for Halden, but come up blank. We were only together about 7 months, a little before his conscription day until December. I was infatuated and enamored, and at the time, that rush of utter beguilement was what I knew of love, so yes, I loved him. He grips the edge of the desk and his knuckles pale.
"Fuck, and he's going with us. I caught that too."
"Yes, and I get it." I cross the distance between us. "It's really hard for me to see you anywhere near Kat."
"I never loved Kat."
Zayden's head whips up.
"Sure, the idea of—"
He swallows like he might puke.
"Halden putting his hands on you makes me want to put him back into the wall, especially given the fact that he can touch you and I can't. But knowing he's been here—"
Zayden puts his hand just beneath my collarbone—
"has me considering murder, so there's no chance of him worming his royal ass back in."
"He can't touch me." I lift his hand and press a kiss to the center of his calloused palm before putting it back above my heart and holding it there.
"This will only ever be yours.
You could leave me or even meet Malik, and it still would be. I've made my peace with knowing there's no getting over you. He moves faster than I've ever seen, and in a blink, his hands are full of my ass and I'm up against his chest. Stop me if I cross the line. That's the only warning he gives before his mouth is on mine. He lays claim to every inch of my mouth like it's the first time, with deft, skillful flicks and plunges of his tongue that devastate me in the best possible way. The second he surges forward, I can't bring myself to care why he's kissing me like tomorrow doesn't exist. The world tilts, I feel the bed beneath my back, and I only care that he never stops. We can live right here, never taking it a step further as long as he keeps his lips against mine. My hips arch as he settles between my thighs, and the weight of him feels so damn good that I moan. Limiting ourselves to the kiss only makes it that much more intense, like we're both desperate to elicit every sensation possible in the simple yet infinitely complex connection of our mouths. Madness. This need between us is always the sweetest madness. He is the craving I'll never sate, the rush I'll never get enough of, only him. I hook my ankles over the small of his back and kiss him with every ounce of longing that's built within me over the last few weeks. He sucks my tongue into his mouth and I whimper as heat flushes my skin and addles my mind. I love you, he says against my mouth and rolls his hips. I love you. The confession ends on a gasp as I feel just how hard he is for me. My hands slip down his muscled back over the leather of his flight jacket. I miss you. Violet, he groans, his hands capturing mine, pinning them above my head. No, not his hands. Shadows. My breath hitches. He holds me as a more than willing captive while he kisses me over and over. A heady combination of urgency and demand paired with determined restraint. He slides the backs of his fingers down my neck, and goosebumps rise on my skin as pure electric need runs the length of my body. Fuck, your skin is so damn soft. My only answer is a whimper, then a moan when the caress is followed by his mouth. Yes, my hands tug at their bonds, and I arch my neck for more. Still, just a kiss. He works his way down my throat and grasps my hip. He rolls away from me so quickly that I almost go with him, and I'm left staring at my ceiling, gasping for breath. But at least he's in the same condition. Fuck, he throws his forearm over his eyes. Please have mercy and say something, anything, that distracts me from how damn good you feel in my arms. I blink, trying to force my mind to function, and the soft bands of shadow retreat, freeing my wrists. My heartbeat slows just enough to allow logic to creep its way in, and I shove my hands back under my pillow to keep from reaching in his direction. The book. My dad left me a letter. He needs me to go to Devarelli. His head whips to me, and I slowly turn mine, locking our eyes. Then we'll go. My body isn't big enough to contain how much I love this man. We'd have to go under the pretense of searching for Andarna's kind, and I think that's what he's alluding to, but I could be wrong. I have to read the research. His brow furrows. You still think we should search the Isles, right? I nod. Then it seems like we can accomplish two goals with one trip. I ghost my tongue over my swollen lower lip. Searching the Isles means we'd need the audience with the king, which requires leaving the wards to get an artifact for the King of Devarelli, and calling in help from Halden, so it's not that easy a choice. It is. If my dad left me a letter. Zayden rolls up onto his elbow. You can tell me all the ways it's going to be shitty, and I'll still say, let's go. The artifact is in occupied territory. His face tightens. And if I ask you to stay behind, all cozy and safe while I get it? I shake my head. Yeah, that's what I thought, he sighs. At least it will be a chance to evaluate how we function in this squad Grady has put together. When do you want to leave? As soon as possible. An excerpt from Chapter 3, The Cannon of the Flyer. The gem given to you upon graduation from Cliffsbane should always be worn close to the heart. But if you have not mastered your control, it will only amplify your downfall. Chapter 19. 4 nights later, our riot of 8, now including Mira thanks to Halden throwing his royal weight around, crosses the border at Samara and magic slips free of the ward's cage. Power expands in every direction, running like a current that rushes around me, beckoning me to play or destroy. My skin tingles as we slip down into the valleys through the espens, and I'm struck with the oddest urge to try and pluck strands from the very sky and weave runes. It feels like there's more power out here than usual, I tell Taryn as we dive along a ridgeline.
There's actually less. The Venon saw to that, he replies. But you grow more powerful every day, more capable of recognizing what once was entirely invisible to you.
I could recognize it, and Darna chimes in, if you ever let me come with you. With Theophany hunting you, you're far safer at Samara. I grip the pommels as Taryn levels out along the riverbank, sticking to the shadows the overcast night has provided. I swear there's a permanent bruise just below my sternum from trying to sleep in the saddle. This thing could use some modifications before we head to Devarelli. But you're not, Endarna argues, her voice fading the farther we fly. I can burn Venon.
I've told you a dozen times. First, fire burns the hottest, which could explain the phenomenon, Taryn replies. This mission is dangerous enough without adding a desirable target for any lurking dark wielders.
They're all busy to the south. Her voice trails off as the connection is severed.
We have about 12 hours before you'll start to feel the pain of distance from Andarna,
Taryn reminds me as we cut through the night, opening the conversation to Sigael and Zayden's pathways. I have no desire to test the 3 to 4 day limit that riders and their dragons can be apart, nor to suffer the fatal consequences. 3 hours to Anka, 1 hour to locate the Citrine, 3 hours back. A third of the riot stationed at Samara launched an offensive against a known stronghold just north of the fortress an hour ago, which allowed us to slip through the red line on Battlebrief's map unnoticed by the enemy. Everything is going according to plan. 3 hours later, it feels almost a little too easy as we land in the desiccated village square of what had once been Anka. Definitely not occupied. Other than evading 2 patrols of Wyvern by staying low, we haven't seen a single enemy, only sparse villages and dimly lit encampments of civilians between the land the Venon drained in their advance towards Samara. Taryn sets his claws down first as usual, despite being told to hang back in formation by Grady, and the rest follow suit around the withered remains of a clock tower.
Just because I accept the terms of the mission does not mean I like them, Taryn grumbles low in his chest as I bundle my flight jacket with the pack at the edge of my saddle and dismount.
I know, my feet hit the ground, and everything feels off without the presence of magic. According to our latest intel, wielding within drained territory isn't just challenging, but it seems to draw Venon. So I let the conduit fall along my wrist, keeping it close just in case everything goes to shit. Stick to the plan. I'll let you know when we have it. Taryn bends, then launches high above the crumbling 2-story buildings, and is quickly joined by the rest of the dragons, 2 of whom bear the riders Grady chose to do recon from above. Pew and Foley. Zayden strides past the clock tower, heading my way. He's done a good job of masking his discomfort, but I can see the struggle in his eyes and the curl of his fingers. You should have taken the sentry assignment, I tell him as Grady gathers the others to my left.
I wasn't leaving you on the ground.
Our hands nearly brush as we turn and walk toward the group, but we're careful not to touch, especially with how Aura Beinhaven narrows her eyes in our direction. And it's not like I'm risking anything as long as I remain calm, cool, and collected within the perimeter. The magic is long since drained. Which is why the dragons are in the sky flying over the land the Dark Wielders left untouched in their haste to reach Samara. I can't tell, Grady flips the hand-drawn map over. Her handwriting is atrocious. It looks like that way, Captain Henson notes, leaning in to see and pointing across the village square. Which is why you should have brought Cat like Violet asked. Mira plucks the map straight out of Grady's hand and studies it. Griffins can't keep up, Grady reminds us, and this mission will serve as a trial run for all those that follow. An extra member would have thrown off the dynamic. What fucking dynamic? I ask Zayden. I loathe Aura, don't really trust Grady after he fed us the serum during RSC training, and don't know the rest of them. Calm, cool, collected, Zayden slides his hands into his pockets. Really? I don't see a prince or his guards here, let alone anyone representing poor O'Meal. And stop whispering like they can hear you. Mira rotates the map and lines up the landmarks Kat sketched out. The area is deserted, and we'll be fine as long as our sentries intercept any wayward patrols and no one wields. Mira points past my right shoulder. It's this way. I'll take that, Lieutenant. Grady snatches the map back. If I didn't know better, I'd think you were setting the mission up to fail. Mira offers a cutting smile. Let's go. Grady glares my sister's way, then stalks past me in the direction she pointed. If it makes any difference, Captain Henson says, glancing at Mira as she passes. I agree with you. I don't. Aura pushes up the sleeves of her uniform and runs by. We can't trust the flyers. And yet, it's their artifact that Kat is helping us find, I mutter as we follow. Cool, calm, collected. Zayden scans every building we pass. New mantra since becoming Duke? Mira asks, surveying the remains of what looks to have been a marketplace on our right. Just trying not to explode on Grady and ruin our little trial run here, Zayden replies. The village is silent as we walk the abandoned streets, passing the desiccated remains of people every block or so. It reminds me of a sandcastle. The structure is there, but so delicate that even a harsh breeze might crumble the colorless structure. We turn at the next intersection, entering narrow columns of residential row houses, with barely enough room for wagons to pass each other in the street. Some of the houses connect to ones across the way with covered bridges, creating a tunnel effect every 20 feet or so. Ironic that they built these so tight to keep dragons from fitting between them, and yet it's dragons that might save us, I remark, studying what's left of the architecture. A griffin would fit with no problem, as long as its wings were tucked, Mira notes. This is the one. Grady stops in front of an expansive house. Was it the plaque that says Home of Amelia, First of the Drifts that gave it away? Zayden asks, nodding toward the right side of the door. Grady's mouth tightens. You know your places. Let's go. The front door creaks loudly enough to wake the dead as he swings it open and everyone freezes. My stomach does its best to displace my lungs, and I clench my fists when power immediately rises in my veins, responding to my fear. They can't hear us, Mira repeats, then clasps my shoulder as she walks by, heading to Grady and Henson. Be right back, Zayden says, but there's no usual brush of his hand or shadow along my lower back because Aura is watching like we might just start making out at any second. The four officers disappear into the creaky house, leaving Aura and me in the middle of the street. I'll take south, I tell her, moving toward the doorway, then facing in that direction. Fine, she puts her back to me and we begin watch. Rumblings sound from within the house, and moonlight illuminates the cobblestone street. I look to see the clouds breaking as the wind picks up. Shit. Stay out of sight, I tell Tarn.
I am as the night.
He sounds more than a little offended.
It is de Gaulle you should worry about.
Aura's red club tail. Any luck? I ask Zayden.
This whole place is a museum, and Kat only remembers that it was on display upstairs in a protective case.
Not sure if you've noticed, but there's a lot of upstairs, he answers.
I glance up at the five stories that look ready to topple at any second. We're going to be out here a while. This is exactly why we should have brought Kat. Maybe being here would have triggered the memory of exactly where it was displayed.
Great.
Aura shifts nervously behind me, her shadow swaying near my feet.
You scared? I ask as nicely as possible. We're hundreds of miles from the wards, standing in a fucking cemetery, she snaps. What do you think?
As someone who has spent my share of time beyond the wards, it's healthy to be nervous. Something rattles up ahead, and I tilt my head, focusing in that direction. A glass bottle rolls down the gently sloped hill of a street, propelled by a gust of wind before lodging itself in a doorway four houses over. See? I glance over my shoulder, then whip my entire body around to face Aura. What the fuck?
Just being prepared.
She stands with her hands raised. A flint strike device between thumb and forefinger, fear pinching her face. That, I motion to her hands, is an unhealthy, mission dangerous amount of fear. Put them down, away, gloves on. You need to remind yourself that wielding is the worst possible thing we could do.
No, she lifts her chin. Getting drained is far worse. I'm not about to be caught off guard. In fact, you should stand ready too.
Absolutely not. I shake my head and turn my back on her. My orders are not to wield unless there's an imminent threat of death,
and I hardly think that bottle constitutes such.
As your senior wing leader, I'm ordering you to stand ready, Aura seethes. What use are you as our greatest weapon if you can't wield at a moment's notice? The only rank that matters out here is cadet. So with all due respect, fuck off. I shrug and roll my shoulders, trying to dispel the tide of energy pushing against my archives door. At least that means Tarn has located some undrained land. Found it, Mira calls through an open window. I blow out a sigh of relief. The door across the street swings open with an ear-screeching creak, and my head whips toward the sound, fear launching my heart into my throat as a figure steps out of the shadows.
Vi, watch out! Aura's going to—
Zayden starts. Don't! I pivot and throw myself at Aura, but the damage has been done. Fire sparks and spews from her hand like dragon flame and engulfs the doorway. We land in a tangle of limbs, and I narrowly keep from smacking my head on the stone of the stoop as a wave of heat blasts the side of my face, lighting up the night. Dread seizes my heartbeat, but I cut it off before it can take hold, or worse, freeze me with fear.
Get off me! Aura bellows, shoving me aside as the figure stumbles forward into the moonlight and screams.
I gasp, and for a millisecond, fear wins. Captain Grady is on fire.
No!
Aura scrambles across the stone as he kneels in the center of the street. Every inch of the leathers that should help protect him is covered in foot-high flames. And we don't have a water or ice wielder on the ground.
Zayden! I yell, gaining my feet and running toward the captain. Aura, take off your flight jacket!
We can smother the flames. We have to. His shriek etches itself into my memory as he collapses, and I wrench Aura's flight jacket from her hands and throw it over him, hoping to put out the fire. The scent of charred flesh turns my stomach, but it's quickly overpowered by thick, cloying smoke coming from the building behind him. Zayden gets to me first, yanking me back from the captain, and shadows stream from our feet to smother the flames as the screams cease. But the fire in the building ahead of us roars.
Fuck.
All three of us look up as the wind gusts. My heart drops to the ground as house after house catches fire, spreading down the street. The land, the buildings, the very wood they're built with may be drained of magic, but they go up like kindling. Ryerson! Mira shouts, barreling out of the house behind us, Henson close on her heels. Do it! We're as good as dead already! I wrench out of Zayden's arms and stumble toward Grady as shadows rush up the sides of the buildings. But the flames have already licked their way across the bridges. We're in the middle of a fucking tinderbox. Sir! I drop in front of Grady, but he doesn't move.
He's dead, Zayden announces like it's the weather forecast. And I can't.
I look over my shoulder to see sweat beating on his skin as he shakes his head, lifting his hand again and again, directing shadows over one building and then the next. But there's no earthly way to keep up with what the wind is spreading. Every cinder, every gust sends another structure up in flames. Captain Henson battles what she can, but even the best wind wielder can't control the drift of ash and ember. The sky cracks, and my eyes jerk upward. The bridge connecting both halves of the house comes crashing down, engulfed in flames. I move to push Zayden out of the way, but Mira's standing between us, her arms raised and fingers splayed. A pulse of blue emits like a mage light, and the bridge cracks overhead, splitting in two and falling on either side of us. We have to get out of here. Mira hauls me to my feet, then yanks a stunned Aura up by her collar. The senior wingleader just stares wide-eyed at the spreading destruction. I can do it, Zayden shouts, raising shadow after shadow.
Let it go, Henson orders. The best we can hope for is a clear path to the village square for evac.
Zayden's arms tremble, and fear stabs deep within my chest, chilling me to the bone. If the land he stands on hadn't already been drained, I put myself in his face, uncaring that everyone can see, and grasp his cheeks in my hand. Let it go, I beg. Zayden, you have to let it go. We need to get out of here. His tortured eyes lower to mine, reflecting the flames in their onyx depths. Please, I keep my gaze on his. There's no stopping this. There's only surviving it. He nods and lowers his hands. Relief fills my next breath. But that's all the time we're allowed.
Run!
Mira shoves at us both, and we break into a sprint down the narrow street. Pain shoots from my ankles up to my knees, but it doesn't matter. Not when both sides of the street are catching fire slightly slower than we're running.
Focus and get to the town square,
Tarn orders, and I do just that. Focus. Dragons can't fit down these streets. We have to make it to the square, or we're dead. Every ounce of my energy goes into the placement of my feet so I don't roll my ankles on the stone. The movement of my breath, the space between us as Zayden keeps pace beside me. Mira hurries ahead, turning corner after corner with a certainty I could never possess in this maze of a village. And we follow, running for our very lives.
There!
Mira shouts, pointing as the clock tower comes into view at the end of the street and wings beat overhead.
No, she yells, Tarn first.
I shake my head and run faster.
Go, if Tiny is here, then go.
I'm not leaving, she starts to argue.
Go so we can, Henson yells.
Zayden throws his arm out, catching me in a skid as Mira races into the courtyard to meet Tiny's arrival. Their run-on mounting is flawless, timed to the peak of perfection, and Mira is already climbing the clubtail's foreleg as Tiny flies over the village. Henson nods as if talking to her dragon, then looks back at Aura.
You're next. 1 minute out.
The flames start catching the houses behind us.
This is my fault!
Aura clenches her fist to my right and looks to the courtyard with wide, frightened eyes.
Grady is gone. They'll know we're here. There's no hiding a fire like this.
All that matters is that we get out, I tell her. Don't think about anything else.
Overhead, Zayden shouts as wings block the moon. We're not the only wings in the sky,
Tarn warns, and ice prickles the back of my neck.
Go,
Henson orders Aura, pointing toward the courtyard.
Dagal is on the approach.
Wait, I shout, but she's already sprinting toward the clock tower.
Tarn says we aren't alone.
She'll make it, Henson says in a voice that doesn't quite convince me. Scorching heat flares at my back, but I keep my eyes forward as Aura races into the open. A claw reaches for her, and I hold my breath for them to make contact. The claw curls in the same way Tarn's does right before he scoops me up.
The talon emerges somewhere near the middle of her spine. Blood gushes from the wound, but Aura's scream is silenced as the wyvern drags her lifeless body into the sky. Not too far overhead, a dragon bellows. Zayden's arm tightens around me, supporting my weight when my knees try to buckle. Tarn, 60 seconds, he says, urgency lacing his tone. Damn, they got here fast, Henson mutters, rocking back on her heels. All right, Ryerson, you're up. They got here fast? That's all she has to say? We do not answer to you, he says without taking his eyes off the courtyard. The moon catches on a flash of navy blue wings. But instead of landing, Sigail streaks overhead, flying fast and hard for the wyvern that's just picking up altitude. What in Dune's name? And she damn well doesn't take your orders, Zayden says to Henson. Sigail lunges, then seems to rake her claws into the wyvern and climb its back. Her head darts left, then right, and the creature's wings snap free. Remind me never to piss her off, I mutter as the wyvern falls, crashing somewhere at the edge of the village. A corner of Zayden's mouth rises. Approaching, Tarn announces. Take us both, I grab Zayden's hand. Run with me! Zayden's brow furrows for a heartbeat, and then he nods. I am not a horse. Tarn fires back as Zayden and I run for the courtyard, the heat at our back flaring to unbearable temperatures. They patrol in pairs. I shout down the pathway that connects all four of us. Take us both. My boots pound against the stone, and ahead I see Sigail banking back in a steep turn. We hit the open air, and I block out the very real possibility that the wyvern's partner will see us first, sprinting harder for the widest place where Tarn can grab us. I'm here, he says down our shared pathway. Trust me, Zayden demands, and I can't tell which of us he's talking to, but I instantly nod. He pivots with alarming speed, putting himself in front of me, then hauls me up against his chest, bringing our heads level. Hold on. I throw my arms around his neck, the conduit bouncing against his back as he pitches his arms outward, and bands of midnight black shadow wrap around us both, binding me to him. Familiar wingbeats sound over the flames and the scant heartbeats before we're plucked off the ground. Tarn's claws hooking over Zayden's shoulders and yanking us into the night. Wind tears at my eyes as we fly towards Sigail, but another pair of wings approaches from the right on an intercept path. Two legs, not four. On your right, I warn Tarn, then turn to Zayden. You'd better be damn good with these shadows. I have you. Zayden promises, and the bands tighten. Power floods my body as I throw open the archive's door, and heat stings my skin. Gods, if I channel too much while attached to him.
He's been a great deal closer when you've wielded,
Tarn reminds me, and nope, not thinking about how he knows that. I fumble for a second to clasp the conduit and hold it away from Zayden's skin, then let the energy surge to a breaking point and focus entirely on my right hand. Power snaps, whipping through me and departing all in the same heartbeat. Lightning strikes, and I yank it downward from the sky with my finger, taking aim. Heat singes my fingertip, but I hold the bolt as long as tolerable, then set it free. Straight into the wyvern's back. The creature plummets and Sigail roars, blasting its corpse with a stream of fire as it falls past her. She pitches back to follow as Tarn banks left, taking us from the path that leads along the river and heading due west. We fly like that for another few minutes, just long enough to be sure we're safe. Then, land to take our respective seats and launch again. Tarn leads us low, through the shadows of the mountains and up the ridgelines. 2.5 hours later, we cross the wards 100 miles south of Samara. We make it back to the fortress with 3 hours left to spare of our 12-hour limit.
I can't believe you let him die, Lieutenant Pugh mutters as we walk under the portcullis at Samara.
Zayden turns on him and pins him to the wall with the weight of his forearm. Beinhaven was a scared cadet who thought he was Venon. What the fuck is your excuse? Where were you when that wyvern skewered her?
We were patrolling north,
The man's complexion favors a tomato as he forces out the words, but neither Mira nor I intercede.
You were needed above the village.
Zayden removes his arm, and the lieutenant slides down the wall. Henson and Foley help Pew stand, then walk away from us into the courtyard, and Mira holds up her hand once their backs are to us, so we stay right where we're at.
I got there first, she says,
turning to face us and dragging a long chain from the inner pocket of her flight jacket. A thumb-sized stone, I'm guessing, was once the color of a citrine, now rests in its setting, cracked, hazy, and smoke-hued.
Shit.
My shoulders dip. If Cortland doesn't accept that, this all will have been for nothing. That's not why I'm glad I got there first. Mira hands me the necklace, then reaches into her pocket again, drawing out a folded piece of parchment. This is. Clutching the necklace in one hand, I take the parchment in the other, noting that it's addressed to Lightning Wielder. It was sitting next to the necklace, Mira says as I open it, and Zayden tenses at my side.
Violet. Just a reminder that while I want you to come of your own free will, I'm capable of taking you whenever I wish.
Why do you not ask me for the answers you so desperately seek?
T.
Theophany. My stomach hollows. Either she knows I'm looking for Andarna's kind, or she knows I'm looking for a cure. Zayden stiffens to the point of statuary.
She knew we'd be there.
Well, shit. There's that, too.
An excerpt from Subjugated, The Second Uprising of the Krovlin People by Lieutenant Colonel Asher Sorengale. Perhaps the point of this is not to deny rebellion, but to only go to war with those you trust implicitly. Chapter 20. Upon our return, I spend a few days reading every single book on Devarelli Jacinia can find to prepare for my progress briefing with the Scenarium. Between those, classes, the tomes Queen Mariah sends at my request, modifying my saddle, and the hours I spend wielding on the snow-capped peaks above Besgaeth, I fall into bed exhausted every single night. By the time Friday arrives, I've devoured The Dark Side of Magic, Red Regalia, The Scourge of Our Times, and the nightmare-inducing A Study in the Anatomy of the Enemy, none of which brings me the answers I need for Zayden. Neither does Jack. He's all too happy to tell me about Asim progression, how channeling from the earth happens as easily as breathing beyond the wards. But he won't give up the name of his sage or give up anything other than trivial information about them. And he's sure as Malik not telling me how Theophany knew we'd go for the citrine or what answers I'm searching for. But once I finally make my way through my dad's manuscript for the third time, and scour the research that behemoth requires, I have an inkling of a thought of where he might have been headed in his hypothesis. I keep it to myself, partially because I'm scared to be wrong, but mostly because I'm terrified I'm right. When Varish mentioned last year that he thought the research dealt with feathertails, I never imagined it would lead in this direction.
I want to go, Riddick says as we walk down the plush red carpet of the administration building, headed for the Great Hall.
I search for the right words and try to quell the vat of nausea that is my stomach. Presenting to Halden is bad enough, but I skipped breakfast knowing the entire Scenarium waits for me, most likely to assign a new commander, and I'm not accepting one.
It's not going to happen, Reese says with a sigh from his other side.
She's going to have a fight on her hands as it is, and they won't let you miss class anyway. They're not even letting us in that room.
I can keep you safe, he insists, turning to me, an unpeeled orange in his hands.
Pretty sure Ryerson will keep her safe, Sawyer notes, walking on Ree's right with the help of his crutches and his latest metal prosthetic leg. He's even rejoined classes this week, though he has yet to make it to the flight field. And Mira. I'm taking Dad's letter to heart. A foursome of infantry cadets steps aside so we can pass, and the massive double doors to the Great Hall come into view. Kat stands near the threshold, smiling up at a tall flyer I've never seen before. He looks to be a couple of inches shorter than Zayden, with a lean build and a quick smile. His hair is as dark as Kat's, reflecting the same blue mage light that catches on the hilt of the blade he carries at his side, and the V of daggers sheathed at his chest. My eyebrows rise. I figured when I asked her to join this meeting with someone she trusts, she'd choose Marin. But I'm all for her moving on if it means she's going to stop staring at Zayden constantly. Though I kind of hoped Traeger had a shot with her.
Hey, will you just try?
Riddick's voice doesn't only tense up, it rises, causing all dozen people in the hallway to glance our way. What's this really about? I reach for his upper arm, and the four of us pause 10 feet shy of the door.
I just need to go.
He looks away and grips the orange in both hands.
One of us needs to go with you. Ever since...
Pain flashes through his dark brown eyes as he brings his gaze back to mine.
Ever since Athbeen, one of us has been by your side.
He lifts his finger.
Except the time you snuck out on your little sibling's only trip to Cordon. The school splits, and we go with you. Bezgaiath falls under attack, and we're there. Heading into Poromiel for Marin's brothers? It's us. We get separated, and you either get dragged into an interrogation chamber and tortured for days, or nearly roasted by Aura's fire. And I know I can't be the only one who thought if Liam had been there, keeping watch over you, it never would have happened.
He swings that finger toward Rhiannon and Sawyer.
You both know it crossed your minds.
A lump grows in my throat.
I appreciate it. I do.
But I don't need anyone keeping watch over me.
I didn't mean it that way.
He covers the orange with both hands.
I just think bad things happen when we aren't together.
Ree can't go. She has an entire squad to lead. And Sawyer is still recovering, which leaves me.
And if Ryerson had been 100% sure of his ability to keep bad things from happening, he wouldn't have assigned Liam to our squad in the first place. The guy is powerful, but he's not infallible.
If he only knew the truth. Gods know who they have waiting behind these doors to replace the ones we lost. But I'm already sure I can only trust two of them, Mira and Zayden.
And you are?
Sawyer asks, leaning on his crutches. Riddick's eyes narrow.
I'm just as good a fighter as any of you. And while you've been focused on rehab and Rhiannon is chasing first years to keep them in line, I've been the one reading every fucking book Jacinia shoves at me and spending extra hours training.
The skin on the orange splits.
It really pisses me off when you guys act like my sense of humor somehow lessens my ability to show up for our squad.
Riddick, I whisper, staring at the orange. What did you do?
I've been trying to tell you.
He hands me the fruit, and it immediately chills my hands.
You weren't the only one who's been spending hours honing their signet.
Using my thumb, I peel back the rind. The fruit of the orange is frozen solid beneath it.
How did you do it? I've always been able to draw water out of the air, he says. Plus, I get bored waiting for Sawyer to wake up when he rests,
No offense. And if there's one thing healers are good at, it's leaving fruit lying around. I realized I could freeze the water in the fruit.
My lips part as my mind spins through the implications.
Sorengale, are we going in or what?
Kat yells from down the hall. I look up at Riddick and whisper. Are you trying to tell me that you can freeze the water in someone's body?
He rubs the back of his neck. I mean, I haven't tried it out on anyone or anything living, of course. But
yeah, I think so.
Well, that's unsettling. And glorious. And horrific. All of the above, really.
Holy shit, man.
Sawyer moves in closer. Can other ice wielders do that?
I don't think so,
Riddick shakes his head. Turns out there's only a few of us who can even pull the water from the air.
Sorengale,
Kat snaps.
Yeah, you're coming with me. I push the orange into Riddick's hand, then motion toward the door.
Though it has nothing to do with the ice, there's no magic where we're headed, and everything to do with the first point you made.
Bad things happen when we're not together,
he says quietly. Only go to war with those you trust implicitly. I nod, and we head down the hallway.
It's about time.
Kat rolls her eyes, but her friend opens the door on the right, and I catch a quick glimpse of his name tag as we walk in. Cordella.
Her cousin?
Half the tables and benches in the hall have been pushed to the sides, leaving an open space in front of the long center table where the members of the Cenarium sit facing us. And they're not alone. Atos and Markham flank Halden, who sits in the center of the group listening to whatever lies Markham whispers. Zayden occupies the left end of the table, his chair turned toward me, his legs outstretched as if this meeting determines the flight schedule and not the future of the continent. His eyes locked on me.
You all right? I ask, my gaze flickering toward Halden. He's still breathing, so I'd consider that a win.
Zayden answers, looking rather bored, but the shadows around him have sharp edges that contrast the blurred ones down the table, the natural result of multiple light sources.
They're set on their course, so you'd better determine ours.
Ah, Cadet Sorengale.
Halden's smile lights up his eyes, and he leans away from Markham.
Right on time.
Actually, we're missing someone. I glance around the room, noting that for once in her life, Mira's late. It's also impossible to miss Foley, Henson, and Pew sitting farther down the table. All that's left of our task force. And one addition, Captain Jarrett.
As I see it, there are two extras in the room.
The Duchess of Moraine shoots a disdainful look over my shoulder.
They are here at my request. I lift my chin. As is Cadet Gamlin.
Riddick stays silent at my side.
You can't be serious, the Duchess starts.
I'll allow it, Halden says, lifting his hand. Recent losses have been regrettable.
But a month has passed, and it's time to act. You have the Citrine, and a meeting has been set with King Cortlin. Command is being transferred to Captain Henson.
Halden gestures to the rolled parchment in front of him.
Is he fucking serious? I glance at Zayden.
Entirely. A corner of his mouth lifts. Have fun eating them alive.
I cross the freshly mopped floor and take the scroll, then step back so I'm in line with Riddick and give my orders a quick read. We will leave for Devarelli the day after tomorrow, meet with the king to try to negotiate an alliance, secure a foothold for expanding the search if we don't find Andarna's kind there, then report back. All under the command of Captain Henson and Executive Officer Lieutenant Pew. While Markham and Melgrin search Aracia for any clues we have missed.
Did you read this?
It takes all I have not to crush the orders.
They want to search Aracia.
They can get fucked.
No, I say to Halden.
I'm sorry. Halden leans forward.
I said no. I rip the orders in half. No to your commander, no to your selections, no to searching Aracia. No.
I warned you, Zayden says down the table.
Halden stiffens, and the Duke of Caldeer shifts in his seat before narrowing his eyes on me.
Captain Jarrett is an excellent addition, and the best swordsman we have among the riders.
That's overly generous, considering I watched Lieutenant Ryerson kick his ass without even trying a few months ago at Samara. Power ripples through my veins, but I keep my anger at a simmer. We tried it your way.
And clearly succeeded, Halden counters. Or are you not in possession of the artifact?
We lost two riders out there because you saddled me with a squad full of people who don't know or trust one another. Yes, I have the artifact, and I'll take it to Devarelli, but only with a squad of my choosing. I hold my shoulders straight and catch Riddick nodding out of the corner of my eye. The door opens behind us, and the familiar rhythm of quick, efficient steps bolsters my courage toward pure audacity. Sorry I'm late, Mira says, bypassing Kat and her cousin to stand at my right. Hell of a headwind out of the north. What did I miss?
I think Violet is about to lose her shit, Riddick whispers.
This, I toss the halves of the scroll at Halden, as he catches them with the same reflexes that make him lethal on the battlefield, is not the plan. And they, I gesture toward the seated riders, are not my squad. Zayden's smirk deepens, and he settles into his seat like he's ready for a show.
Searching Aracia is the first logical course of action, considering it is the only area we have no information on,
Markham starts, his cheeks leaning toward Ruddy.
You do not speak, I snap, meeting his gaze for the first time in months. Not to me. As far as I'm concerned, you have the credibility of a drunkard and the integrity of a rat. You dare complain about missing 6 years of information on Aracia when you've hidden centuries of our continent's history from public knowledge?
Halden's brows rise, and Mira shifts her hand to the pommel of her sword.
You cannot speak to a superior officer, let alone the commander of a quadrant, with such disrespect!
Markham roars, coming out of his chair.
In case you missed it, when I cross the parapet, I am not in your chain of command, I fire back. But you are in mine, Atos warns, and I speak with the authority of Melgrin.
Fury gets the best of me.
And I speak with the authority of Tern and Darna and the Empyrean. Or did you forget that two dragons also lost their riders?
If I wasn't in love with you already, I would be now, Zayden says, crossing his ankles.
Sit, Markham,
Halden orders, a note of surprise in his tone.
You tried and failed.
Markham sinks into his chair.
We'll give this one shot. Name your squad for the Devarelli mission, Cadet Sorengale. Halden says, but know that if you fail, we'll assign another commander, and refusing to continue will negate the terms of the Second Aracia Accord.
The one that gave Zayden back his title. I swallow the lump in my throat.
No pressure or anything.
Accepted. I straighten my shoulders. For the Devarelli mission, my squad will consist of Lieutenant Ryerson, Lieutenant Sorengale, Cadet Gamlin, Cadet Cordella, I glance back over my shoulder to get his rank, Captain Cordella, Cadet Atos, Prince Halden, and whatever favorite guard follows you in case you stub your toe, I say to Halden. When we succeed, I reserve the right to switch out members after the first expedition.
Absolutely not, Atos shakes his head. You'll take only commissioned officers, no flyers, and Ryerson is out of the question.
Halden lifts his hand and Atos quiets. Zayden stills to the point I have to glance to see if he's breathing. I'll take whomever I wish,
I counter. As third in line for the throne, Catriona's capable of speaking for poor Emile.
And the captain?
The Duchess of Moraine asks, her face twisting like she scented something sour.
You need two flyers.
Cadet Cordella deserves to have someone she trusts, too. I tilt my head at Halden. Dragons don't carry humans who haven't crossed the parapet or climbed the gauntlet. So you're lucky griffins are kinder in this regard, or you'd never keep up. Lieutenant Sorengale is the only rider capable of creating her own wards. Cadet Atos is the only rider I trust who speaks fluent Krovlish, which is the second most common language used in Devarelli. Cadet Gamlin is dedicated to my personal safety, and even if Lieutenant Ryerson weren't the deadliest rider in the whole of our forces, I glance at Atos, then Halden. Which he is. You know Tairn and Sigale cannot be separated, and there's no telling how long we'll be forced to travel. I'm tired of arguing this point.
He's a professor at this war college, Atos sputters.
He is my choice. Halden sits back in his chair and looks at me like he's never seen me before.
He hasn't, Tairn reminds me. He no longer knows you.
I stare straight at Halden. And the Tirish kept contact with Devarelli up until the last century. Who better to reopen those lines of communication than the Duke of Tirindor himself? Zayden's surprise barrels down the bond, but he remains unnaturally still.
You may read my father's book whenever you want, I tell him.
Ryerson holds a seat in the Cenarium, the Duchess of Moraine argues. He can't just leave. He doesn't even have an heir should tragedy befall. Though I might be persuaded to agree to his absence, should he consider my daughter's proposal.
Proposal? The blood runs from my face.
One of about a dozen, since they gave me the title back. Nothing to stress over.
A soft strand of shimmering onyx brushes against my mind. My heart lurches. We have very different ideas of stress.
At least say what you mean, Eileen. Halden sends a sideways glance her way. You don't trust him and would like to see your bloodline in not only Moraine, but Tirindor.
He led a rebellion,
she slams her hands on the tabletop.
My father led a rebellion,
Zayden says without taking his eyes off me.
I took part in a revolution. There's a difference in the words from what I'm told.
I catch my mouth curving. Besides, arguing makes no difference. Zayden sits up. I'm going. Llewellyn will speak for me in my absence while taking counsel from my only living blood relative, Cadet Duran. Lieutenant Tavis has been co-leading my classes and will step into the role of professor to teach them fully while we're gone, until it's time for the next professor to rotate in.
If I give my permission,
Halden retorts.
Wrong move, Halden.
I ask permission of one person on the continent, and it sure as Amari isn't you.
Zayden slowly turns his head to look down the table at Halden, and breathing becomes irritatingly difficult.
I speak in my father's stead,
Halden bites out through gritted teeth.
Right, because he's the one I defer to.
Zayden's gaze swings to me.
When would you like to go?
We fly for Devarelli as soon as His Highness is ready. I look Halden straight in the eye, counting on his absolute inability to read my face or sense the fear that he'll retaliate against Zayden with the power of the crown. Halden stands, as does everyone at the table except Zayden.
Let's at least keep that part of the orders intact. We depart the day after tomorrow.
He leaves through the northern door, followed by everyone who stood.
No snide remarks, I say to Riddick with a quick smile. I'm proud of you.
I kept the inside thoughts inside,
he replies with a flash of a grin as Zayden approaches.
You really had to prick his temper, I ask as he reaches us.
No, Zayden's gaze flickers to my mouth.
I did that just for fun.
Drake Cordella? Mira shouts, and the three of us turn as she charges across the room toward Drake. As in the Nightwing drift?
He gives my sister a charming yet cocky smile. You've heard of me.
You were instrumental in bringing the wards down in the Montserrat offensive last year.
Her eyes narrow.
I was. His grin expands. She knees him straight in the groin.
Oh, gods.
Oh, Riddick winces. He's going.
Drake hits his knees, and Kat gasps.
Down. Riddick finishes.
You must be Mira Sorengale,
Drake manages to say, pain etched in every line of his face.
Guess you've heard of me, too. She crouches down to his level. If you ever endanger my sister's life again, my blade will replace my knee.
Got it.
To his credit, he lifts his head and sucks a breath in through his teeth.
Hood.
Excellent. She pats him on the shoulder and stands, dismissing Kat with a glare before turning my way. You get one chance to form your own squad, and you choose your ex, your current lover, the Quadrant's resident smartass, two people who have tried to kill you in the past year, one over said current lover, and whatever Dane is. These are your choices for the most important mission any rider could possibly undertake?
I'm glad someone said it,
Taryn chimes in.
And you?
It's not my finest comeback.
Don't forget Halden's guard, Riddick adds. I'm sure they'll be super helpful.
She flat out rolls her eyes at him, then heads toward the door.
I'll need to provision here, but it looks like I'll have time to read the next volume in that series you love, she says to me over her shoulder.
Mom's journals. I nod and soak up the victory for one sweet second. We could be only days away from having everything we need, and Darna's family, a cure for Zayden, and whatever it is my father wants me to retrieve from that merchant in Devarelli. The day after tomorrow can't come fast enough. An excerpt from Subjugated, The Second Uprising of the Krovlin People by Lieutenant Colonel Asher Sorengale. Tirindor was the last to cut contact with the Isles. The province has a reputation for its cunning leadership, but in this case, I would add, astute. Chapter 21. We stop at Athbeen the first night, testing the Griffin's limits with speed and endurance. Then we push them to their max with 24 hours in the saddle, pausing only to feed and water the winged ones before reaching Cordon as dawn breaks. Everyone thinks the torturous day is to prepare the Griffins for the flight across the sea. Only Zayden knows the real reason. Even though he made it through the night unscathed, I'm terrified to let him touch the unwarded ground more than absolutely necessary. We fly over swaths of scorched and desiccated land, evading Venin with the help of the intel Drake brought. Part of me can't help but feel like we're evading the fight, even though I know we're searching for the way to end it.
The Griffins cannot keep up,
Tarn warns me as we descend toward Takaris's palace.
Especially when carrying the bulk of two humans.
Carrying is a loose term for the baskets Halden and his guard dangle in, held by the Griffin's claws.
Are you offering to carry one of them? I ask, fighting off the sleep that has weighted my eyelids for the past 3 hours. The drastically warmer climate isn't helping either.
I'm suggesting we continue onward with only riders and flyers.
The beats of his wings are slow, almost lazy in deference to the Griffins and Endarna, who, unclasped from her harness an hour ago, just in case we were spotted and escorted to the palace.
As much as I would love that, he speaks for Navarre. I reach for my flask, only to remember I emptied it a couple of hours ago.
He will not matter when we find the Irids. Only Endarna will.
Well, as soon as you make contact with them, I'm happy to ditch the prince. Until then, we're stuck with the humans for clues.
I look right, catching glimpses of Andarna in the pulses between Tern's wing beats.
You feeling tired?
Hungry, she responds. Kira says they have a plethora of goats, since the environment is not as suitable for the fleece of sheep. Perhaps they have superior food along with the superior weather.
We're well aware you aren't a fan of the snow.
I grin into the warm wind as Tern approaches the expanse of Takaris's fighting pit instead of the grassy terrace he chose during our last visit.
Perhaps you are like Sigale's kind, Tern notes. They favor the warmer climate.
That's right. The hatching grounds of the Blues used to be near here before the Great War. Guards notice our arrival and rush to the highest terrace of the fighting pit as Tern lands in the center of the field, snapping his wings closed while Andarna touches down less gracefully to his right. Within moments, our 5 dragons and 2 griffins cover every available foot of the field. I detach one of my packs but hesitate to leave the second strapped to the back of the saddle.
It is safer that I carry it,
Tern reminds me, dipping his shoulder impatiently.
It means you can't detach the saddle.
I don't want him uncomfortable.
As if I would disparage my family name by being unprepared should the enemy...
Got it. I undo my strap, then beg my body to comply as I climb out of the seat. Muscles, tendons, ligaments, they all creak and pop as I dismount, and my knees nearly buckle when I hit the ground. I can't help but shoot a glare at Kat as she springs up the stairs to meet the 2 waiting flyer guards, like she hasn't been airborne 24 hours straight.
Can I take mine off? Andarna asks, swiveling her head to gnaw on the metal strap across her shoulder.
No, Tern and I shout simultaneously.
No, Andarna mocks. Fine, I seek sustenance.
You will wait until our welcome is assured, Tern orders, and Andarna huffs a breath of steam in his direction, then sits on her back legs and glowers. Pick your tail up off the ground right now. Where do you think we are, the Vale?
I adjust the straps of my pack over my summer weight flight jacket and bite back a laugh when Andarna blasts a short stream of fire at Tern's back leg as she rises to all 4s.
I'm not dignifying that with a response, he snarls.
Ahead of us, Sigale springs into the air, and my brow furrows as Zayden watches her fly away, his features schooled in that carefully controlled mask he loves so well. Atrum, Tiny, and Kath all stay put, but Kirillaire launches along with Drake's griffin, Sovadun.
How are you feeling? I ask once I reach Zayden, noting that Mira is already halfway up the steps of the arena, blade drawn.
I should be asking you that.
He rolls his neck and drags his gaze from Sigale's retreating form to sweep over me, lingering on my hips and knees like he can see how sore they are.
Your body can't be happy after that long in the saddle.
I pause. We both do, as Halden climbs awkwardly out of the 4-foot-tall basket Kira deposited in front of us.
I'm better off than whatever's happening there.
The prince curses when his pack catches on the thick weave of the carrier as he exits, the fabric holding him prisoner. Instead of lifting the bag over the barrier, Halden wrenches it free, tearing the strap clean off.
Clearly, it was common sense that attracted you to the air.
Sarcasm drips from Tern's tone.
I was 18, and he was handsome. Give me a break.
I wince, noting that Halden doesn't exactly rush off to help Captain Windshire, the redheaded guard, out of her basket.
Kingdom seems to be in good hands with that one.
Zayden glances at the drained stones that surround the pit as we walk toward the others waiting ahead. Think anyone will notice if I sleep out here on these stones until we're ready to go?
Yes, my voice quiets as we approach Dane and Riddick, both of whom stare awkwardly as the captain refuses any offers of help and stumbles all 5 feet 10 inches of herself out of her basket to Halden's left, then strides up the steps after him in speedy annoyance.
But I'll sleep out here with you if you want. If it's what you need. I'll do whatever it takes to lessen his risk.
Save that worried look for someone else. As long as there's no reason to wield, I'll be fine. Just like last night. Zayden reaches for my hand and squeezes. Then lets it go before Halden sees. Dane and Riddick both gawk at our surroundings as we climb the stairs out of the pit. It's slightly cooler than when we were here last, but the humidity has the leather of my flight jacket sticking uncomfortably to my skin.
Is this where you got the idea for using the sparring pit at Besgaeth? Dane asks over his shoulder when we finally reach the top.
Zayden nods, scanning our perimeter. The second I spot Takaris, in what are obviously his bedrobes, hugging Kat on the nearby patio, Taryn and Endarna launch from the pit, and the others rapidly follow suit. Mira stands to the side and sheathes her blade, offering a narrowed glance of warning to the two flyer guards accompanying Takaris before Drake clasps the tall one on the right in a friendly backslapping hug.
Let me know if he has any venom locked away in a box as a surprise test,
Taryn says, flying in the same direction Sigale took. We cross the last rows of drained stones imported from the land that borders the Barrens as Halden and Anna reach the patio.
Will do. Don't let her eat anything, or anyone she isn't supposed to.
A bead of sweat drips down my spine, and I adjust the weight of my pack on my aching shoulders again, cringing at the slight slip I feel in the right joint as my head starts to swim.